Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? Hello, Weirdsville. Thank you for joining us once again on your weekly podcast of the weird. I am your host, Adam Beebe. With me, as always, is your other host, Barry Johnston.
How are you, sir?
I am doing well. As you guys know, Barry and I have been friends forever, and that's a really cool thing. We really enjoy doing this podcast together, and we hope you guys are enjoying it too. We've been hearing some good positive feedback. We would love to hear some more feedback. Barry, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm real good. Still very hot here in the Oklahoma southwestern part of the world. We are, man, it's just been brutal. But we're making it. We're making it. We're doing well. Positive, always positive. Yeah, man. Just doing our thing. How about yourself?
Been hot here too, man. It's been hot all over, it seems. It seems like this has been a pretty hot summer.
Yeah. It was cool for a long time, and then it's like, boom.
Yeah.
Super hot.
Yeah, dude. I had a feeling it was going to be. I had a feeling it was because we got that kind of mild winter. So, but yeah, dude, just plugging away. And, just having
got a new automobile, right?
Yeah. My old car, it died on me. So I replaced it with the new car that was used car. That is just the exact same car, except 1 year newer.
Oh, good, man.
So how
many miles you put on that thing?
A lot. I don't know. 1,000. 20,000. I don't know. I'm just making that number up, but thousands and thousands because, I use that for my part-time gig of delivering. Mm-hmm, and
people might have just thought for a second there, wait a minute, he has a other job? Yeah, we still have humble jobs, guys. We're not making a ton of money doing this.
Or any.
I mean, let's just be honest here. But we do it because we love it, right? I mean, we enjoy this. We enjoy taking time to talk to friends and new friends, and that's the reason why we do this thing. You know, we're thankful for people that want to tune in every week, and there's been a lot of you, and we appreciate it.
And especially the people that have been sharing stories because, man, we've had such a great response. And, we've had a pretty good record for people scheduling and showing up. We did not have that today. We had a cancellation. But our guest today, Kyle, a.k.a. the Emotron, he came in on the last minute. We met him through a mutual friend. And, man, it's a whole new episode, a whole new area that we're covering. It's very enlightening. It's very spiritual. It's controversial, but it's a great discussion that was had, especially you. You really led on this one. Because I was just really enthralled with the stories and everything. But
it's just a subject matter I've been interested in for quite a while. And it has to do with some things that I think some people haven't really ever thought about or haven't thought very much about and maybe not even know that's out there. And we're a little bit on the spiritual medicine kick with this episode. Mm-hmm. And all I ask is that you just have a little bit of an open mind. If it's not something that you're into, then by all means, you don't have to listen to the episode. But Kyle, he's got a lot of time spent researching and sort of, developing a relationship with plants and with other herbal type medicines of the kind. So I'm excited about it. I didn't know about it really until you suggested that we have this gentleman on. So I was excited about it.
So what we're talking about today is a traditional Amazonian medicine. It is a psychedelic drug. It is called ayahuasca. And it's actually a combination of a couple of different things. And it's used in a ceremonial tradition of the indigenous people in the Amazon. And it's really come into prominence, I guess, over the past kind of like 5 or 6 years, where people are talking about it and people are going to the Amazon and going to South America on trips to trip. Yeah. And it's something that is a, and Kyle's going to address this, and he says this, it's not a party drug, it's a medicine. And so it's really cool. It's really cool.
It is.
I learned a lot from this, and I knew a little bit about it beforehand from, you know, podcasts and other things that I listen to that I've heard talk about the ayahuasca. And William S. Burroughs was one of the first of the North Americans and well-known people to really kind of seek it out and report it. And I've always liked Burroughs and the Beats and all that stuff. So, so we really appreciate Kyle coming in and rescuing us. And let's get to it. Today, joining us from Durham, North Carolina, is Kyle, a.k.a. the Emotron. Kyle, what's your weird story?
All right. So I guess a backstory on the topic that y'all wanted to hear. Well, mostly Barry, you said, Adam, wanted to hear on the subject. So the backstory, I grew up in outside of Chattanooga in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in a small town called Ooltewah, Tennessee. My parents, very, very Southern folks, abiding by the rules of the South and shit.
As you do.
And, which, you know, some of those rules are, the war on drugs and buying into that, you know, in their lifetime, 60s, 70s. And also having, both of my parents had siblings that were pot smokers and, got a little bit wild with substances around that time. And thus, both of my mostly my granddaddies, you know, some hard-ass farming Southern men, not liking the long hairs and the drug use and, you know, drop-kicking some motherfuckers in the face that are happen to be their sons and whatnot. And, you know, both of my parents kind of adapting, well, not violently adapting, those personality traits from their daddies, but instilling, like, you know, drugs are bad type shit in their children, especially, you know, me and my sister. In middle school, they found my sister's diary one time when she was at school and she was talking about smoking pot or something like that with some of her friends, and they ripped her out of middle school and, like, took her to get a drug test. Thus, me adapting, like, you know, the straight edge lifestyle until, I guess I was like 21 when I started drinking for the first time, and, you know, joining the road shortly after that, touring and whatnot. And that kind of lifestyle, as you were talking about in Greenville earlier, Adam.
Yeah. Life on the road, man. It's hard. It's hard. It's a lot of fun, but it's hard and up to you really quick.
100%. And I think I had a lot of self-realizations a little bit later in life. When I was 29 years old, 2009, I started working in a grow house somewhere in America. And as a person that had never smoked weed before, you know, working for someone that was growing in their basement in somewhere that was extremely illegal back then. I guess a couple months after working for this person, hitting the bong for the first time, and everything completely turning the opposite way, becoming more in touch with my emotions, calming down a lot, becoming a little bit, well, not a little bit, a lot more spiritual, and eventually seeing alcohol in a different way. It's been 10 years since I started smoking weed and stopped getting drunk. I have a couple shots of Jaeger or a glass of wine here or there the last couple years, but for the most part, you know, I ain't got drunk in like 10 years because of weed, which, you know, was the first, I should say, I guess, psychedelic for me.
Yeah.
It was very psychedelic for me around, you know, 10 years ago when I first started. And weed opening up the gateway to exploring psychedelics and researching them, mostly mushrooms and acid before I actually started using them. And looking at people like Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys and Syd Barrett from Pink Floyd and what's the other singer-songwriter from Austin, Texas?
Rocky Erickson.
Not Rocky.
Oh,
okay. Daniel Johnson.
Yeah.
Okay. And I just wanted to kind of talk about this for a second because I think that people that are from our era, Kyle has a real similar story to Adam and I think, in a lot of ways, because, you know, we were Southern boys and we were growing up in a very, you know, religious, you know, conservative household, and we're told that, you know, substance was bad. Not that it's not, you know, for, you know, not that it's for everyone. I'm not saying that, but when you grow up in a way where, especially in the time that we grew up in, with, you know, the times when, you know, there was a large, there was an AIDS epidemic, there was war on drugs, which is, you know, for the younger people out there, there was an actual war that was waged on drugs by, you know, Mrs. Reagan, the, you know, president's wife. And, well, you know, it sounds good, but what happens is that as time goes on, we all young people start seeing the all the holes in the game, you know, especially when you start sort of experimenting a little bit and you start understanding that what we're being told and what is the reality are two completely different things. So I just kind of wanted to say that. I want to say my piece on that.
100%. Yeah. So my research, where we left off, Daniel Johnson, Syd Barrett, and Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, maybe they went too far, I understand, watching interviews before and after and seeing their minds, especially Brian Wilson, the most being like changed with what I think was by psychedelics and doing much of them.
I'm a huge Brian Wilson fan. Huge.
Me too. So, as me.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And I think the teetering between like genius and insanity is like, you know, if you do too much acid, you might go insane.
Yes.
Not calling you insane, Brian Wilson, if you're listening to this. Yeah, something happened, buddy.
Right.
Something.
Right.
So I guess 2009 was when I started smoking ganja. When I was like 31, like a couple years later, was after I researched all of the psychedelia and whatnot, you know, I was like, hey, maybe I should try this and see how this works for me. And I can go on and on about all the trips that I had and how inspirational and how evolutionary they were. But I won't give you a million stories on that. I'll get to the subject matter. But yeah, definitely LSD was the first psychedelic use for me after marijuana, and then, you know, trying mushrooms here and there. But mm-hmm. I would say LSD was definitely like the big one for me. It was the one that yeah. actually stuck more than mushrooms. And DMT shortly after that, researching that and researching ayahuasca as well, and wanting to do ayahuasca ceremony in Peru, wanting to do, but never making it there.
So we need to talk about DMT a little bit, because yes. people are going to be like, what the fuck is DMT?
Yeah.
Dimethyltryptamine, is that correct? Is that the mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah, dimethyltryptamine.
And so what it is it's what they believe is that there is a gland, most things that live on the planet, they believe produce this chemical. Mm-hmm. And it lives in human beings, they believe it lives in the pineal gland, which is mm-hmm. in the center of the brain, right? Mm-hmm. And they believe that it could be responsible for dreaming and a lot of other psychedelic experiences that we have, especially when we die, right? They believe,
and when we're born, right?
And
too,
when we're born, right? So mm-hmm, they mm-hmm. believe that the chemical floods the brain, and that that you are experiencing that as a part of your consciousness, which you can't really sum it. When you say that, you're not going to be able to really understand what that means, but that's the initial definition or the idea behind it.
Mm-hmm. It's also called the God molecule.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is for the effects that it has on people, which you will, you know, elaborate in yes. shortly. Yes. So.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
So, your face has just brightened up quite a bit, whatever, like, oh, yeah, yeah. So.
Yeah. Y'all know y'all shit about DMT? So.
Yeah. Well,
So I guess my research after LSD and mushroom use led me to, you know, ayahuasca and DMT, and wanting to go to ayahuasca ceremonies. I was going through a hard time around that time, and thought that that may be one of the only things to heal me. Yeah. And eventually, having the bright idea, you know, that I'm not going to be able to go to Peru or afford it to heal myself, and mm-hmm. to have the mindset of letting it find me
right.
instead of me going to find it. And shortly afterwards, you know, it started coming slowly into my life through friends and whatnot. And it was interesting. The first three experiences that I had with DMT, maybe four experiences, it didn't work at all. Hmm. I was ready to give up, and that was in within like maybe a year to a year and a half time frame that I tried it, you know, three or four times. And it wasn't until my buddy who was on tour came from the West Coast and played a show in Atlanta, and he brought some for me. And after his set, we sat in my van, parked, of course, and he loaded up a pipe for me, and he said, "This is for you. I know that this hasn't worked for you in the past. Let's try it again." And, you know, I took the first bowl rip, and of course, nothing happened again. And I passed it to him to smoke, and he said, "No, hit it again." And I hit it a second time, and oh my God, did it work that second time.
Wow.
Fell down onto my steering wheel of the van, and I think we were listening to Sun O.
Oh, man.
Some droney noise shit.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And it was perfect. It was like, you know, my soul was ripped out of my body and sent through like this vortex of psychedelic colors and geometric shapes, and I felt as if there was like these huge pages of like text, like flying in information, like flying through my brain. And I think that it taught me how to meditate. And I started like breathing and focusing on breathing, thus going a little bit further in, you know, the short amount of time that it was in my system. And you know, also I feel like that first time prepared me for the, I've been saying 50 to 80 times since then that I've broken through on DMT and you know, gone there and experienced what Terrence McKenna calls mechanical elves, you know, the geometric patterns with, I think a lot, you know, represent a lot of healing and, you know, staring at those geometric patterns, you know, I feel like there's some sort of cryptic healing and cryptic knowledge as well as the mechanical elves, like working on my body and sharing knowledge as well.
Well, that's, you know, that's what they say too, is that like, cause so again, we're talking about in the beginning, we were talking about ayahuasca. And so people probably don't know what that is, but ayahuasca is a liquid version of this, and they have been doing it down in the Amazon for thousands of years. And what was going on was when us Americans especially caught wind of this thing, we started going down there and trying to find shamans that would take you in and show you the way, basically. And it's treated as a medicine.
Yes.
And this is not something you want to fuck with, right?
Oh, it's not a party.
Right. Yeah. And so one of the things that I think is really phenomenal about what's going on with ayahuasca is, and DMT, is that the work that they're doing with post-traumatic disorder, which is kind of what you're talking about there, Kyle, is that it, and I've never done it because, and I've been trying to, I've been telling my wife for years, I'm going to do this. I'm going down to South America. I'm taking a trip, dude. I just don't contact me for a week. You know what I mean? I want to do that. But I realize now that it's harder. It's getting harder and harder to get, you know, those real, the real old school shamans to do that.
No, sir. No, sir. You are wrong. It is really? Here. It is here.
Oh, it's here. It's here. States. Okay.
There are, yeah, there are, I was listening to another podcast talking about ayahuasca not too long ago, and there's actually, there's a church in the United States.
In Washington,
that uses, I want to say it's Washington.
I think it was Washington.
But they use ayahuasca legally as part of their ceremonies.
Yeah. I was always like, you know, scared to get a hold of the guys that are trying to be something that they're not, you know. But
well, luckily, the ceremonies that I've been to, I've gone through five ceremonies with a legit underground like DIY shaman that's come out here from Peru was the first three ceremonies, and then India based shaman was the four and five ceremonies. And the shaman, his daughter, I think, moved to Oregon or Seattle or somewhere out there. So he got his green card to come out and visit her. And upon being in the United States, he was like, these motherfuckers here need it more than
big time the people
in Peru here.
Big time. So, and because it gives you, apparently, Kyle, you know this more than we do, but apparently it gives you the substances that are, in my opinion, totally my own opinion. I'm not bringing Adam into this, but the substances that are the ones that are, that give you quality, don't lie. They don't lie to you. They show you your true self. And
100%.
And that's what this is about, right? This is what chasing that is about. It's about finding yourself. It's about cutting through the bullshit. And that's what they're doing with post-traumatic disorder. The thing, I've seen a couple of documentaries on it, and It's quite fascinating. Before you poo-poo it, folks out there, you need to check it out. You need to see what they're doing because it's amazing.
Yeah, from what I understand or what you're trying, I feel what you're trying to say is that it's one of the it's a drug, for lack of a better word, that suppresses the ego. It doesn't feed the ego, so it breaks you down to being part of the bigger, and it breaks you away from being, I guess, maybe self-absorbed. I could be wrong.
Shows you your place, right?
Yeah.
Sort of.
100%. And they don't use the word drug. The shamans, they call it
medicine.
Yeah, they call it medicine, which I've been trying to correct myself with. You know.
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, drugs are medicine, but still, you know, not all medicine is. Wait, not all drugs are. Wait. Something like that.
Yeah, I think
you know that, what I'm trying to say.
I think that drugs get a bad rap, at least from my growing up, and you know, slogans like the war on drugs, you know, Nancy Reagan, y'all were talking about and shit.
Right. Yeah.
So I guess how I got to the ayahuasca ceremony was the DMT trip that I did before I was invited to the ayahuasca ceremony, which I didn't know that I was about to be invited there. I was smoking DMT in a bed with one of my friends, and you know, it was the same experience that I've had, very similar, you know, to the previous ones that I had had, you know, leaving my body. Geometric shapes, you know, mechanical elves, and stuff like that. And I went there twice in like an hour period of, you know, passing the bowl back and forth. And then the third time I felt as if I was going there, you know, the same trip. And then I got to a certain point. It was like a wall. Mm-hmm. And it just felt so overwhelming and so harsh and so dark. And I stood up in the bed and I told my friend, I said, I'm throwing up on this one. And I ran to the bathroom and hugged the toilet and just had the most amazing, violent, healing purges coming out of me. Oh, wow. Like so loud. And it just felt so fucking amazing to vomit and just, you know, I was letting go of something for the very first time.
I know that it's common with ayahuasca. Is it also common with smoking it in the DMT form or?
It's very interesting. I've never talked to anyone else that has vomited on DMT. I did it twice.
Okay.
A couple years ago, it happened once again when I was in Detroit. And it wasn't as violent and like roaring as the first time. But it felt like some sort of magical, majestical entity was like on a horse waving like a scepter or a sword of some sort, I felt as if they were destroying a lot of like my childhood trauma. Stuff like that.
Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Each one of these experiences, like, what does it feel like? How long does it feel? Does it feel like I've heard it feels like a long time, like an eternity, right? Is that true?
Ideally, it's, you know, on the watch, it's like 5 to 20 minutes for me, but it has felt like a longer time than that. More times than most, more times than less, or however you want to say it.
Right.
And
that's with the DMT, right? Not the ayahuasca.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So what about, is there a difference in the feeling between DMT and ayahuasca?
For me, yes.
Okay.
And after that first vomiting on DMT experience, you know, a couple of days later, I was one of my roommates was like, hey, I just got this email. A friend is being the booking agent for the shaman is from Peru, and they're having three ceremonies that they're inviting me to, and I would like to invite you to as well, you know, close to where we were living. And in the woods at a healing retreat center. And I said, he was like, yeah, roommate was like, yeah, I'm going to do one. And I was like, do you mind if I do three, like all three, you know, if it's there to do, I've been waiting for this for a long time. And I feel like, you know, my, you know, 30 to 50 times going there on DMT has prepared me, and especially vomiting on DMT and the whole purge aspect of ayahuasca. You know, I felt like that was a sign that I should be doing all three ceremonies. So I ended up going. I was the only person I knew in the first ceremony there. The roommates did the second and third ceremony. There was like 30 to 40 people in a yurt, and it was the Peruvian shaman, like I said. And he allowed us to lay down, which the India-based shaman the next year, he made us sit up, which was a little bit challenging.
Yeah.
But within the first...
Why is that? Why is that?
I have no clue.
Okay. It's a mental and physical sort of thing that happens where you're...
I have no clue. I know that the India-based shaman did not want people to fall asleep. And if people were snoring, he was like waking them up.
Okay.
But the Peruvian-based shaman was like... And that was the more powerful one for me, was the Peruvian-based shaman.
Okay.
And within the first... I would say 30 minutes of like 6 or 7 hours of the duration of the ceremony, ceremony one with the Peruvian shaman, laying down, the most giant guy in the whole room. He told me to call him Granny. I had some really good conversations with him. He had to be 300 or 400 pounds. He was violently vomiting so much that some of the shaman's aides and helpers had to like take him outside and like tend to him all night, because he, within 6-7 hours of the ceremony, you heard this guy, like his vomiting, like echoing throughout the whole forest.
That would have been me. I have that kind of a vomit.
He does. Poor
guy. It was honestly hard for me to go anywhere, especially with like 30 or 40 people like vomiting, crying, having orgasms, like shitting.
Now is that fucking with you and your trip?
Yeah. 100%. But okay. Also I think because of that, that was the lesson for me. Okay. Was the DMT did not work for me. I did not see any visions. I did not see any mechanical elves. I did not
really
leave my body. I was in the room meditating the hardest I've meditated in my whole fucking life because of the whole energies in the room, you know, 30 people. And I'm very much a extreme empathic person. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I felt completely ripped off because, you know, 30 to 50 times going to DMT world, I had those expectations on going there for, you know, 5 or 6, 7 hours to DMT world. But on the other hand of DMT is, you know, the ayahuasca root, which when brewed with the DMT, combining plant or bark allows us to fully digest the DMT versus smoking it. But in addition, they call it the mother vine, which also has like, it encourages the showing, like you were saying, Barry, you know, the soul mirror and showing your true self and not being able to look away from it. And you know, that kind of harsh but motherly love of showing you. And that was what worked for me All five times, DMT didn't work for me.
Really?
Five times, just the ayahuasca worked for me, and it showed me that about myself, about, you know, the empathicness and essentially, you know, giving me a sword and a shield in life. And, you know, like I said, you know, I felt ripped off that first night. I was the only one out of 30, 40 people that went back for a second glass at hour like five or six, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the shaman, you know, granted me another glass. And it wasn't until the end of the ceremony, which was, you know, an hour or two later after I drank that second glass, that everyone that was in the ceremony was coming down and the shaman was holding like a talking circle where everyone was talking about the things that they were going through while I was feeling them during the whole ceremony. And that's when I started fucking throwing up violently into my bucket, was hearing these people talk about what I was feeling and what I was trying to guard myself from and meditate on. And the rest of my night, as everyone in the ceremony was like going to eat, you know, a vegan meal for the first time, mm-hmm. and, you know, talking about their ceremony, I went back to my tent and I just held onto my bucket and vomited. And I was shown like all the evil that I've done in my life, all the love that I'm capable of and have shown and had, you know, all the love that has been shown to me, and
wow.
lots of family stuff and, you know, childhood trauma and just everything that you hide deep down in yourself, you know, was completely like opened up and I couldn't look away. And for those first 3 days, you know, I didn't eat, I didn't sleep. And the second ceremony, it was a lot more intense for me.
More intense than that?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. And the girl, the babysitter girl, she picked up the phone and there was a policeman on the other side. And he said, "We've tracked the phone call and it's coming from inside the house."
Whoa.
Dude.
I love those urban legend stories.
Dude, I do too. And you remember the one where the girl, it's always the babysitter or it's the kids making out in Lover's Lane, but there's the one where the girl comes up and she finds the kids are watching TV and she turns them around and their face has SpaghettiOs.
Oh, man. Or the hook guy. Remember the hook guy?
Oh, the hook. The hook was hanging from the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you got a story that is similar to any of those awesome urban legends, we want to hear it. Because, you know, those urban legends, man, they start off as somebody's true life weird story. It's got to be true somewhere.
But it was the same. It didn't start. The ayahuasca did not start affecting me until after the ceremony on the second night once again. But Before we drank the ayahuasca for the second ceremony in the afternoon, the shaman offered a tobacco cleansing ceremony, which he gave us I think there was like 14, like 15 of us or something like that, that took the tobacco cleansing ceremony, which was essentially like a shot of tobacco juice and then as much water as you can drink. The shaman was like, you know, constantly pouring glasses and like, drink more, and looking into our purge buckets for, you know, what's coming out. And essentially, from what I've learned from that, is like the shaman's looking at the bile and
right.
essentially vomiting up something that's, you know, protecting your stomach lining or preventing the medicine from getting there fully. Thus, that second night being way more intense, like after the ceremony. You know, the whole ceremony was, you know, I was already used to like holily like protecting myself and like meditating from the first ceremony. And then doing that also in the second ceremony, but afterwards, you know, also going back to the tent and vomiting and having that second round of thinking about, you know, everything that's, you know, happened to me, and seeing that soul mirror, as I've been calling it, and you know, when I talk about it, but also like all three of those nights, when I was like vomiting in my tent alone and crying and fucking going through it, you know, feeling a lot of doubts about this medicine, and feeling like I've been ripped off, in a lot of ways. But it wasn't until, and telling myself, I'm not doing this tomorrow. I'm not going anymore. I'll sit in the room with everybody, but I'm not going to drink the medicine. But it wasn't until the next morning after the ceremonies, talking to the tribe that was there in the room, and processing with them, making myself feel a little bit more comfortable, and thus repeating, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 times ceremonies, was extremely, extremely important. And it was, it is a very tribe-like atmosphere. Everyone brings their warrior energy. And like I said before, and like we were talking about, it's not a party. It's not a party
and
drug.
And you bring up a good point, because I think people are listening to this, and maybe there's some people that are thinking about this. Mm-hmm. But like, you really need to do your research, and you really need to go with the right people, because somebody that can lead you in a way that is beneficial. There's a lot of charlatans out there too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, like you said, not something to play to play with, because, you know, it will strip everything away and get you down to the core. And if you don't have somebody there that can show you the way, you know, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble. And I've heard some horror stories about that. So I would encourage anybody, if you're looking into doing something like this, to really take your time and find the right person, you know.
I think I was very blessed and luckily that these shamans found me, or I found them, whichever way, because they were the shamans that were singing songs and shaking like branches from Peruvian jungle, sounded like wild birds and blowing bird whistles, and all sorts of, like, you know, percussion instruments. Wow. And in addition to like singing songs of Icarus, which is songs of like ancient healing, and you know, these shamans are drinking the medicine too, especially the Peruvian shaman. He was drinking it the whole weekend.
Yeah. Wow.
And for people
that haven't heard those songs, there are, you can find them on the internet, and they're absolutely beautiful. They're beautiful and they're haunting, and just the songs by themselves will take you into a meditative state for sure. You know, without the medicine, because I've listened to them.
Lots of, ayahuasca, la da 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 da,
yeah.
I heard that for 3 nights. Oh, it felt so good, even though I was like not in a trance, like, well, trance like DMT state. I was like in that meditative state, and I was fucking rocking out to those songs, like fully enjoying them for, like, you know, 6-7 hours, like those 3 nights.
Well, it's amazing that, you know, when you talk about, because we could talk about Sid Barrett, we could talk about, you know, Brian Wilson, when you talk about the marriage of psychedelics and music together, you know, and the ayahuasca stuff, there's something happening there, man. We're tapping into something that is greater than ourselves. And there's a reason why those melodies and those rhythms are there, you know, because it's just like, what, for whatever reason, it's the medicine is working with the soul, and it's and it comes out in this way, and it's special. It's special, man.
I don't think those two boys you mentioned, I don't think they needed it. Even Daniel Johnson, I think that they were already there. Maybe the Beatles needed it to write all their psychedelic shit, you know, coming from the Beatles mania haircut phase, you know.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
But I don't think that Brian Wilson, Syd Barrett needed that.
Yeah.
Medicine. They were already there. I think DMT was being released in their brains.
Yeah.
I would agree with you, man. I would agree with you on that. Yeah. It's intense stuff, man. You're the first one that we've had on here that have talked about this. And it's
about psychedelics, period?
Well, no. Just about DMT and ayahuasca and that whole. This is going to be a whole other door for people. There's a lot of people that have never heard about this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've always said my mentality when it comes to these types of things is that, you know, just like you said, we got to treat these things with respect, man, because it will absolutely, if you think you're coming into this thing showing it some knowledge, it will tear you down. This isn't cocaine. This isn't heroin. These aren't drugs that are going to lie to you and tell you that everything's great and you're a master, you know.
Mm.
These are things that show you who you really are. And I think that the world right now is ripe for this type of technology. I consider it technology. Mm-hmm. We're getting into a day and age when we have more time on our hands and we have to figure out how human beings fit into this world where we no longer have to hunt for our food.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of time spent left, you know, what's my purpose? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a man in his middle ages and there's a reason why midlife crisis is a thing. Because I think you get to the point where you're like, what am I supposed to be doing? You know, my life is meant for more. And if we can use these technologies to help us on our path, you know, I'm not judging anybody, man.
Mm-hmm. And more on that, to add to that of just the current consciousness, I guess, of the world, there's this great increase of anxiety and depression in younger people, mm-hmm. you know, and there's something that needs to be, you know, we've got to figure out something to do, you know, to help people out. And, you know, the big pharma companies are producing these, a lot of artificial chemicals, you know, to help, you know, balance people out or whatever. And I mean, you know, I'm certainly they are certainly can be beneficial. But also, you know, we have to, if it is beneficial for a human, for a person to have a ayahuasca or DMT or some kind of experience like that, if you're looking for it, if it can be, you know, done in a proper way, like, you know, in the, where the conditions are good to be good for somebody, then, you know, why not embrace it? Why not accept it as medicine and, you know, get over, you know, I mean, it's, you know, get over the clench butt cheeks and grabbing at pearls of the idea.
We've done a great job in this country of demonizing drugs, you know, I mean, The anti-marijuana campaign is one of the greatest farces in modern man, in the history of our existence. And it's only because of political and financial reasons why. And it's taken us this long for us to get over that. And we're still getting over it. I mean, we're just now to the point where we've for the majority of the states, we've legalized it. And that's a great thing, in my opinion, because a man should be able to dictate what he would like to indulge in. And like I said, this is not something that you can overindulge in. It's I'm not saying it's for everyone. It's not for everyone by any means. But what I'm saying is that the drug itself will regulate itself. Mm-hmm. You can't overuse something like this. It will slap you down.
Mm-hmm.
It will.
Yeah. Look at Brian Wilson and Sid Barrett.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They still slap down in a lot of ways.
Right.
They should have listened.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, you know, we're talking about things that come from the ground, that are, you know, given to us by God, or whatever you want to call this existence, whatever you want to call the supreme energy or nothing, whatever. It's here for us. I trust it more than I trust a pharmaceutical technician.
100%. Which I think in a lot of ways could be just a Band-Aid, just hiding those things and not letting it heal.
Correct.
With psychedelic medicines, like we're talking about, it's going to show you some shit.
Right.
And it's going to...
Right.
And so, it's painful, but it's going to heal that wound.
Right.
Possibly.
And some folks shouldn't be taking that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, some shouldn't, but... Some should, you know, some should.
I think
well, yeah, like
most should.
Yeah.
Well, like you said earlier, Barry, about how they're using, they're experimenting, they're researching a lot. And I know in the UK, they're doing it a lot with using it to treat PTSD, mm-hmm. and especially in soldiers. Right. And they're getting some really positive results. So who knows, you know, it could be. So at some point where if, you know, this is the medicine that is needed for you, that you can be prescribed and take it.
And, so. And Colorado just passed the psilocybin mushroom law, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. Again, psilocybin mushrooms are the same thing, man. These are things that we can use. We can use the technology to push ourselves into a better state of consciousness, man. You know, and you can take the woo-woo out of it. You can take the hippy-dippy stuff out of it. It doesn't have to be that. We are all here clinging to this ball floating in the middle of nowhere. No matter what you want to believe that has to, you know, deal with spirituality and all that stuff, that's everybody's got their own take on it. Mm-hmm. But if we're able to put and understand our connection to all this stuff, and get out of our own way, get out of our own mind for a minute, you know, I think we can connect with each other more, and we can connect with our surroundings more if we're able to experience these things in a healthy manner, manner. I'm gonna get
and I think it helps to have people around, like I was saying, the tribe with the ayahuasca ceremony. I mean, we're tribing it up right here, Joe Rogan podcast style.
Exactly, man.
Yep.
Talking in depth about it. And this is just as important talking about it as actually being in the ceremonies or experiencing it, you know, alone or with a group.
Well, we're redefining the warrior, like you were talking about before. These people come with the warrior mentality. Mm-hmm. We're redefining what it means to be a human being in today's standard. And you can be, just because you are researching these different technologies and chemicals, doesn't mean that your physical self has to go away. It's a combination of everything, man. You know, you work on your physical self, you work on your mental self, you work on your spiritual self. All those things are working together. And, you know, if you're lucky enough to find it through Buddhism or through Christianity or you know, Hinduism or whatever, that's great. But for some other people, maybe it takes a little bit, something a little more powerful, a little more potent.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Hey, that's a nice t-shirt you got on there.
Oh, thanks, dude. It's brand new. Do you like that? It's one of the official What's Your Weird Story t-shirts.
Where'd you get that?
It's funny that you ask. I just got it off the brand new Spreadshirt.com site for the What's Your Weird Story podcast. There's no www. You just go straight to shop.spreadshirt.com/ what's without the apostrophe WHATS hyphen YER-WEIRD-STORY, and that'll take you right there.
I mean, you can never own enough clothing.
Well, it's true, Barry. There's t-shirts for the ladies, because, you know, they're cut differently. There's hoodies, which are really cool. There's two different kinds of hoodies, and there's also tote bags, so you can tote your stuff.
That's so cool, man.
So if you guys go out to spreadshirt.com, What's Your Weird Story, currently there are two designs, but there will be more going up very soon. So just keep your eyes out for that. And if you decide to get one of our shirts, tag yourself on Instagram to ours or Facebook. Show your love. Show us what you got. Let's see your true colors.
Well, so the last ceremony that the first two I told you about in depth, the last ceremony I decided to take a microdose, and I asked the shaman if I could be of service instead of and help people out that needed to go to the bathroom or anything that arose, and he granted me service and gave me a microdose, which, you know, was the same. I didn't feel the complete presence of it, but it was definitely in my body. Yeah. The guy next to me, I think his name was Dean. He, right before the ceremony, he had said that he had seen one of my shows and he had been listening to my album, and an hour or two in, he became extremely disturbed and disrupting the whole 30 or 40 people and the whole ceremony. And this guy was right next to me, laying right next to me.
Wow.
And as I said earlier, empath and knowing this guy from shows and whatnot, mm-hmm. last couple years, I've felt it was my duty to like hold him or try to get him away from the tribe. And the shaman was leaving the yurt and like purging for Dean. And I was like trying to hold him and like trying to talk him to go on outside. And he said, no, he felt the resistance, and felt me trying to like get him outside and was like, no, I'm in here. I'm going through it with y'all. And it was, extremely hard for me to go through that. And I felt completely exhausted. It was the shortest ceremony out of the three. And I think that was because the shaman was like, you know, purging and was like, you know, I can't go as long with this ceremony with this guy. So, after the ceremony ended, like, luckily both of my roommates who were the extreme, like, masculine warriors, which was very interesting. Dean and my two roommates, which kind of looked like guys that would play football or sports in high school, more tough guys that you wouldn't want to fuck with. They all had their shirts off too. They're the only three people, the only night out of the three that had their shirts off. So that was an interesting synchronicity. Mm-hmm. I felt like completely exhausted after that ceremony ended. And, my roommate Colin at the time, he was like perched. I found out later he was perched up like an eagle the whole time, which is his spirit animal, watching over me in case things got out of hand. I had no clue that he was watching over me, which touched my heart. Yeah. Thanks up. Big ups to Colin, the eagle, bald eagle, for that. But after the ceremony ended, he got up and gave Dean like the biggest, most loving hug I've ever seen Colin give anyone. And it like kind of reassured me and like eased me that maybe it's all right. And then a little bit later, maybe the next day when we were, when I was talking to the two roommates still at the retreat center before we left to go back home on no sleep or food, Colin brought up that maybe some of the energy that Dean was feeling was my energy of disturbance and some of the things performance wise that I've done over the past 15 or so years, which, you know, could be seen as some as disturbing. And that, that really set deep in me, that maybe I needed to look at some of those things about my performance and about myself. If, you know, in fact, you know, it's making people who are on ayahuasca extremely disturbed sitting next to me and having to hold them, you know, having maybe some of my disturbances, you know.
Yeah.
And that was very, very important to hear, but a little bit hard to hear at first. Yeah. But completely accepted, Colin. Thanks very much, buddy. I appreciate it.
That's great. Wow. That's intense. And
something else that I was going to mention, if I didn't mention it before, was going into the ceremony with expectations and them being completely different. Like, the medicine isn't going to show you what you want it to show you. It's going to show you what it wants to show you.
Right.
And there is no controlling it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow.
That was the lesson I learned, you know.
Right.
Probably after the fifth time I learned right. that lesson, after that's, being like, man, DMT ain't working for me. What's going on? You know, the medicine was still with me and like, nope, it's not going to work these times. It's going to be different than everyone else in the room.
That's interesting, dude.
Especially when people like seeing visions and like going where I thought that I was wanted to or going to go or where I wanted to go, you know, it needed me to go another place, not where I wanted it to go.
Interesting. Interesting.
So, yeah, take that in mind, y'all listeners out there.
Yeah.
Have no expectations of what is going to happen because it's maybe completely different and you may be shitting on yourself like the whole night and vomiting like Granny that first night of the ceremony, which that after that first night and the next morning, I was like, man, I need to find Granny. I need to figure out what if he's all right, what the fuck was going on with him. Really sweet, like maybe our parents' age. He has gone through, I think he was in the Vietnam War, he said, and he had some trauma around that and some opioid addiction as well. But he was such a sweet, large man, and moving more of the Native American path and slowly finding that. And that was his only ceremony, was that first night. Wow. He didn't sign up for the second or third night. So when I found him and asked him what was going on, he said, Kyle, I was purging for every ancestor in my past. They were coming to me.
Wow.
And occasionally, you know, at certain times, you know, he wasn't vomiting all night. You know, there may be like, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes between like the violent purging. But he was saying that the ancestors were coming to him with disease that they died from ancestors that had murdered and killed people in wars, ancestors that had been killed or murdered in war, ancestors that have raped or been raped, just all of these things that he was saying, I was like, man, holy shit. And that was the first, person I talked to the next morning, because I was like on a mission to find this dude to figure out like what was going on after, like, you know, vomiting and not sleeping all night myself. You know, I needed to know what was happening with Granny. And another important factor that happened the first and second night, or the after the first and second ceremony, was mostly the women-bodied people, mostly the older kind of like hippie women, were telling me in like a motherly way, like giving me like hugs the next morning and being like, we felt your presence. You were grounding the circle. Like, thank you for that.
Wow.
Like, this first lady that told me that, I was like, you used the word woo-woo. I was like, yeah, woo-woo. Like,
yeah.
And then, you know, lady two, lady three, lady four hugging me and telling me essentially the same thing. I was, maybe everybody in the tribe has like a certain part to play in the tribe.
Yeah.
And maybe my part was some sort of grounding and meditation and protection work for the circle, or which, you know, I may have thought as like protecting myself. But yeah, that felt really good and really reassuring for me to go back to the second and third ceremony as well. And you know, I thought after that third ceremony and dealing with old Dean getting out of control was going to be my last, but I ended up going with a friend outside of Asheville, North Carolina, to the India-based shaman retreat, and you know, around the same thing. And I don't know, I think being alone in a tent after the ceremony is very important for me. I find that psychedelic use, especially with DMT by myself, smoking DMT by myself, has been really powerful with no other energies in the room. I feel like, especially in nature or laying down on a bed in a comfortable environment, safe set and setting has pushed me the furthest, and that I've gone the furthest in those amount of times, you know, 50 to 80 times that I've done DMT. And I've been doing a lot of microdosing of acid and mushrooms lately, and done some performances in those in those states, and it's felt really, really amazing and really safe for me. Not going too far, but having a little bit of psychedelia to perform with, or in a setting with people that I love and that I trust around, you know, doing a little microdose. And I feel like the loving, healing shaman version of myself comes out a lot more in those states. Another weird thing. After that, those first three ceremonies in Greenville, North Carolina, Spaz Fest.
My buddy,
Spaz Fest?
Spaz Fest, yeah. There is a it's an annual fest that's been going on for a while, and it's a total like DIY. There's a venue that has like that popped up there, and my friend of mine, Jeff, he started it up, and he's an awesome dude, and he started up probably like 15 years ago, maybe. I don't know, but it's been a while, and they have all sorts of shows, and it's a huge variety of stuff. But it's become kind of a big thing there. But cool. It started out of a collective, or out of a house, Spazatorium. So they call it the Spaz Fest.
Cool. So at SpazFest, the weekend after the first three ayahuasca ceremonies, I think I went up and performed on Thursday, hung out on Friday, played with a different noise project on Saturday. And right before I performed on Saturday, one of my buddies, I may not say his name right now, maybe that'll be a future episode if I get the thumbs up. Maybe y'all can have him on as a guest.
Cool.
You may know him, Adam. But liquid acid was going around, and Saturday was like the party day. And he got dosed what we think was 10 hits of liquid acid. And
fuck.
He was in the process of going somewhere when I found him, somewhere where he couldn't control, and he needed someone, he needed a good group of people that he trusted around him to help him. And after performance, someone said, go find so-and-so. He needs you real bad. So I popped like a half of a pill of Molly, and I was like, all right, time to be the shaman again. You know, I went through this shit with Dean last weekend, like last Saturday, like it's time to go through it with old so-and-so tonight. And I went up into the room that they were kind of like partying in, playing video games, smoking weed, drinking beers, in somebody's like house outside of the place that they were having the show and the performances out that night. And dude had just thrown a TV across the room, and when I got there, like, he was sitting down just repeating these phrases. We're Earth, we're all aliens, there's 36 of us, we're rich.
Oh boy,
he was saying, I invented the internet, we can have sex whenever we want. And he was saying other things, but this was a loop until the sun came up, like five or 6 hours later. It was like an ayahuasca ceremony, like 5-6 hours. So me and his girlfriend like sat down next to him and like held his hands. He was like trying to take his pants off. It was like hard. And eventually I was like, all right, y'all, like, oh, our brother is going to be going through this apparently for a while. Can we change this house to a spiritual environment, church for him, and give him the love and the energy and not, you know, party tonight? Y'all can go out and see the bands and whatnot. And eventually we got him on the bed and we're like burning some incense and like laying down next to him. And like the whole tribe from like Thursday and Friday, motherfuckers I didn't even know that may have seen me perform, that I saw perform, that came from out of town, were like coming intermittently in and out of the room and like coming to check on, you know, our homie. Keep trying to say his name. But yeah,
if you accidentally slip, we can just beep it out. So,
oh, okay, good deal. Beep, beep, beep. You know that beep? You know,
yeah.
Do you know? Adam
beeping. So, I'm sure I do. I, you know, like it's now. It's been a long time, and you know, I'm sure. I'm good with faces. I'm probably.
He may have not been around at that point in time, and I don't know if he's from Greenville or not. But eventually. I mean, it was so beautiful to just see everyone coming into the room and showing support. And me and his girlfriend, mostly me, like, you know, trying to do everything we could to, like, bring him outside of this constant loop that he was in for, you know, 5-7 hours until the sun came up. Eventually, he ran out of energy and started saying, like, broke his loop and started saying things like, I can't do this anymore. And we were like, oh, no, you don't have to. Like, relax, drink some of this water. Like, and he would go back into the loop. And, like, it was definitely slowed down by the end of it. And eventually we got him to say his name and his project name, his musical project name. And he started like responding to all of that. And eventually like he got up and went to the bathroom and laid down for like an hour. And by then, like the sun was rising. Everybody was like completely partied out. There's people outside like drunkenly passed out on couches and beep.
Yeah.
wanted to go outside with me, so I took beep outside. And he was like helping me pull people that were like blacked out off of couches and up to the bedroom that he was tripping on for like, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours. And that was a beautiful thing in itself as well. Luckily, you know, I had some Molly there with me to give me that motherly love and further my shamanic energy with beep.
That's great.
That's awesome. Well, I guess I know you got to run, but before you do, you are a performer and you go by the name Emotron, which is to me a great, great name. I've loved it ever since I've seen it, because I haven't seen you perform. I guess I have. We played some shows together, but I
Very long ago when I
very
was
a long ago
little baby then.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so give us a little bit about Emotron and how people can find you and all that good stuff.
Yeah, it's called The Emotron. I've been doing it for 15 years. It's a solo project, mostly electronic based, make music on a, or compose, orchestrate music on a 1996 floppy disk sequencer called the Yamaha QY700.
Yeah,
that's
making
awesome.
Beats and shit. It's kind of like karaoke, press play, and sing my lyrics. Sometimes they different. Well, most every night it's a different. Even if I'm doing the same song, it's different emotionally, depending on what I'm feeling that night, the people that are there, the space that the performances are at. I've been calling it psychedelic electronic performance art lately. Lots of costumes are involved. Usually douse myself in green food coloring, light my genitals on fire.
Fuck
the finale most times. But lately I bought a $20 acoustic classical guitar from Cincinnati, Ohio, it says. And I've been playing a lot of, or more recently going, changing the atmosphere and playing my songs on acoustic guitar versus electronic, which I usually write my songs on some sort of guitar before I put them over into the Beat Lab. So you can find me on as The Emotron on Instagram, and I have a page on Facebook, and I have a personal Theemotron, as if it's, you know, someone's name, Facebook account, which a couple hours ago I was in Facebook jail and just got out 3 days.
Congratulations, man.
I was sharing educational breastfeeding posters, and evidently Facebook wasn't into it. But
yeah,
Instagram was cool with it for some reason.
Facebook's a weird place these days, man. Yeah. It's like I get on there to promote the show, to try to talk to people, find people to come on. But man, I just, you know, it's weird. It's real weird. So, but that's how we got connected, through some mutual friends. And so that was awesome.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Big ups to Richard Benjamin.
Yeah.
Rap name, AKA Richard Faulkner, I think his name is.
Yeah. I've been rich, probably 20 years.
I've I guess I've known him for a while as well, but I feel like the last couple of years we've been performing with each other, and he is very much a holy individual, very smart.
Very smart.
Very good daddy. Very good daddy too.
Yeah, I knew him way before he was a lawyer. So
we got a little microdosed in and stayed with him a couple weeks ago, and I think we stayed up in his garage until the sun came up playing Alice in Chains songs on acoustic guitar and singing them in his garage. Nice. Awesome. And playing we made a drum kit out of like his little girl's like Barbie bicycle helmet and like some paint cans and shit. And it was such a beautiful moment. Thank you so much for inviting us over, Richard, and letting us stay over at y'all's beautiful place. Let's do it again. I want to stay with you every night that I come to Greenville, Richard. I'm speaking to you, buddy.
That's awesome. Cool deal. It's great to have you on, Kyle. We appreciate you taking time to talk to us about this. It's educational, and people, you know, out there that, very enlightening. People that are interested in this, you know, like I said, you know, I don't know if do you suggest any material online that people can look at, or anything like movies or anything that people can check out at all, Kyle, when it comes to DMT and ayahuasca?
Oh, Lord. DMT spirit molecule would probably
be a good one.
I mean, just doing your research, I mean, there's tons of, I think airwood.com, I think that's how you say it, is like a good resource for like trip reports that you can even like upload your own trip reports.
Cool.
And I think that was important for me.
Cool.
You know, looking at before and after psychedelic use interviews with Brian Wilson and Sid Barrett.
Yeah.
That was very educational for me, but
yeah.
y'all know the search terms, y'all know the internet, y'all know how to, search for things on the internet. Just go down the rabbit hole. YouTube will get to know your algorithm and you know, and you know, we mentioned Joe Rogan as well. He has like a lot of great guests on.
Yeah.
I know some of y'all might think of Joe Rogan differently, you know,
as a meathead. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But yeah, he's not. a lot of great things to say. I don't know. I'm a little bit comfortable, recently him talking about homelessness.
Yeah.
It would be nice to, you know, see Joe Rogan homeless one day and for him to experience that and see what it's like instead of shit on homeless people, Joe Rogan. Stop doing that, buddy.
Yeah, but no, he's my Oprah Winfrey, dude. He really is, man. He's a beacon in a world of bullshit. Mm-hmm. And I just have a ton of respect for him. I don't agree with him on everything, but I absolutely love the majority of stuff that he has to talk about, man. And he's just he's really interesting, and he has really interesting people on. He never pigeonholes himself, and he talks to everybody. And
I think that's important. His role in this world
absolutely, man.
He comes from a different background, you would think, and draws people into the psychedelic background from, you know, the Ultimate Fighting and whatever reality show he was on, you know, that people know him and old comedy movies and stuff like that.
Right. News Radio, man. News Radio, one of my favorite TV series of all time.
Yeah.
Loved that. So. That was
great, man. But yeah, no, thank you, Kyle, again for coming on, man, and you're welcome back anytime, brother. Thank you so much.
For sure.
Yeah, much love and many blessings to y'all. Thank y'all so much for having me on your ship. And yeah, let me, like you said, I'll jump aboard again anytime y'all want.
Awesome.
Yeah, if somebody falls up again, somebody goes overboard again, Y'all know who to holler at.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, Kyle stepped up and jumped in. We had somebody scheduled, and they canceled last minute. And we really, really appreciate you jumping in. So this will be a quick turnaround. But, man, what a great episode. What a great
episode. Yes. Thank you so much, Adam, for, like, picking ayahuasca out of the many things that I sent you as topics I can talk about.
You know, and the thing is because I knew that it would really set Barry off, and this is Barry's really starred on this episode with you, as far as, you know, he's really took the lead as far on our side. But that's cool, because, you know, I knew that it would be, you know, in his, some, I know it's something he was interested in.
You threw me a bone. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Brother.
Well, y'all,
I threw him a bone.
y'all are good friends to each other.
Oh, yeah, man, yeah. We try to be.
Yeah. We go back and we're brothers, you know. Hey, everybody, you're listening to the What's Your Weird Story podcast. You probably knew that already because you're listening or downloaded to the episode off of your iTunes or your Spotify or whatever place you get your podcast from. We want to thank you for listening. We also want to remind you to like us, follow us, subscribe to us, make sure that you get your new podcast episode every week. We'd also like to ask you to rate and review so that we can grow our audience, we can have more friends, we can have more stories. So thanks for listening to What's Your Weird Story. Well, dude, man, Kyle, that was awesome stuff. Very informative, very enlightening. I understand that a lot of people are not going to find it that way. They're going to be, you know, because it is a... it is technically, in, you know, legally classified as a drug, but it is also, you know, I mean, in the Amazon, it's a medicine. But I mean, it's just really cool to hear his personal interactions and what has happened, his experiences with it, you know, because, yeah. I mean, it's beyond, it's not recreational fun time stuff. It was something spiritual. And that's, I think, was very important. And I'm glad he shared that.
Yeah, in this country, we have this idea that, you know, because a doctor gives it to you, it's okay. And this is kind of peering into a world that we, you know, most people don't know about. Mm-hmm. They don't know a lot about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the native people in this country and elsewhere have been using these medicines and technologies for millennia. And... Mm-hmm. We're just now getting to the point where we're starting to understand them a little bit more. Whether or not it's something that you are interested in, you know, that's kind of beside the point. But you need to be aware that there are these things out there and that they can be used in order to give people a second chance. And yeah, that's the biggest thing, is that, you know, we're not talking about something that you're going to be able to shove into your veins and, you know, overdose on and become what normal people, I think, would consider a drug addict, you know. Mm-hmm. This is not that. This is something else. This is something that allows you to maybe in a grand scheme help you live a normal life for mm-hmm. some people. You know, talking about people that that use this in order to get a life back, you know, people yeah. that have had really traumatic things happen to them. I'd encourage you to watch the documentaries that are out there on this stuff. It's really pretty amazing what people are able to accomplish with a couple of these ayahuasca sessions. And when they're led by the right person and their heart is pure, it can really do some amazing things. And I think that there's going to be people out there that aren't going to pay attention to that, and they're going to just mm-hmm. lump it in with everything else. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that these things are happening. Yeah. Whether or not you want to embrace it, that's on you. But the world is turning, and we are coming into a different era, and we're starting to understand these medicines, just like Kyle was talking about. I think it's a good thing, personally.
Yeah, it's definitely something, I mean, bare bones minimum. It's something to be looked at and researched as a medicine, because it does have these truly unique and you know, therapeutic values to it. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what becomes of it. But it was just, it was really cool to, like I said, it was really cool to hear his experiences and, you know, just to see him kind of glowing as he was telling these experiences, you know, and so he's really like, you know, I mean, he's genuine in his beliefs about this. And I absolutely, you know, I'm right there with him. I can see it, how it has affected him as a human being because of how he's, you know, and how he's sharing it and what he's saying with it. And it's just, it's really cool.
Yeah. It's not something that is for everyone, like we said before in the episode, but at the same time, it might be for somebody.
Yeah.
And if it's for you, then again, we encourage you to be careful with who you get involved with this stuff, because again, it's not something that you're going to be able to find everywhere. But that's across the board. I mean, that's no matter what you're doing in your life, you need to take caution. Even if you're going to have a beer at the end of the evening, you know, you need to make sure you're not, you know, overindulging.
And be informed just about everything. Right. I mean, obviously it's a very intelligent thing to do. It's a very wise thing to do, is just to be informed about anything, whether if it's going to be something that you're going to take from a doctor, or if it's going to be something that you eat, or, you know, if you're going to get into something, that anything that you don't know, you know, learn about it. You know, don't stop learning. You know, don't ever stop learning. Really, you know, learn about things outside of your normal areas of interest, because it only makes you a fuller, more well-rounded person.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so
you may not be into it, but that's okay too. You know, that's fine. But there are people out there that need this kind of thing. You know, like I said, the native people have known about this kind of stuff for a long time, and there's a reason why they did it. There's a reason why they took time in their lives to sit and sit with their thoughts and learn how to slow things down.
Yes, that's true.
You know,
and that's a good thing in life in general, especially in our society, in our culture. You know, we work. And then we go and we're going over here and we're going over there. And we're trying to do everything we can because we're trying to cram it all in. But, you know, you got to breathe, because if you keep going and going and going, you know, your body, your mind, your soul just can't take all of that.
And that's the deal. And that's probably the reason why we have so many issues psychologically in this country. We have so many kids that are having issues, man, because we don't really deal with the issues, man. We put Band-Aids on the issues. You know, we don't think twice about giving somebody, you know, some psycho medicine, you know, that to help them, you know, sort of make them not want to cut themselves anymore. But we're not really getting down to the heart of the matter. And that's something that something like this helps with. Yeah. It doesn't mask those things. It makes you see that life is what it is, and it's life is what it really is. And if it's not for you, no big deal. But
it's cool.
We just want to do an episode about it. I think it's cool, man. I think it's really cool that we were able to find somebody that has had so much experience with it.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, Kyle really, you know, he saved us, like, you know, because we did have a cancellation, and he came through and big time. So
yeah, thanks, Kyle.
It was really cool. We appreciate it, and we appreciate Richard for making that connection for us, and we appreciate you guys for listening. We always appreciate you for sharing your stories, and we want to keep hearing your stories, whether if you write it in and send it to us, or if you come on the show and talk to us in person, you know, well, in person over Skype.
It's kind of in person.
It is.
It's more in person than it is not in person.
It's true. And that's one of the reasons we use Skype. You know, we always tell people one of the reasons that we use Skype is to record the audio, but we like the visual. We like to see each other. We like to make the connection and see each other's faces and expressions and all of that. And that's what makes it, you know, more genuine and real, I think. So,
yeah, for sure.
So, yeah. So come on, be a guest, be a new friend, be an old friend and share some cool stories. So
just do it.
Yeah. And in the meantime, be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
Thank you. The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.